So this talk was originally going to be about classifying animals as an algorithm and what occurs, but I realized that would probably take like an hour to go through. So I kind of changed the talk a little bit to point counting of what occurs. I'm not sure how much object geometry I can assume, so I'm going to assume that you guys don't know algebraic geometry, and that you guys probably do. So an object curve, at least in most introductory textbooks, is defined as the curve y squared equals x cubed ax plus b. I hate this definition. First of all, it doesn't describe all of the curves. There are certain curves that aren't described by this definition. And more importantly, it has like no intuition of why this is important at all. So I'm going to spend the first 10 minutes going over the actual definition of the curves. And I'm going to talk about mappings between the curves, and then finally get to the point counting of them. So a little bit of AG. Projective plane. Is defined as the set of non-zero triples x, y, z. I should rotate the plane over some field k. So these are triples in your space that are under a certain equivalence relation. And that equivalence relation is that x, y, z equivalent to r, s, t, if and only if x, or x, y, z is equal to lambda r, lambda s, lambda t, or some lambda in the unit group of k. So that's the reason I'm using colons instead of commas in the triples, is because that these are actually equivalence classes and not single points. So the way to think about this is there are all the lines going through the origin of three-dimensional space. So you can divide up all points on the projective plane into two sets. First you have the affine sets, or the affine points, which are those for which z is not equal to zero. And by that equivalence relation that we defined previously, these are all equivalent to x over z, y over z, 1, specifically because we set z not equal to zero. So this forms your usual Euclidean plane. Then you have additional points, the points at infinity, which are those over z is 0. So this is actually a line plus a point, but for elliptic curves, the only one that we're going to care about is 0, 1, 0. And we're just going to call that the point at infinity. So now, we want to find curves in projective space. And we're going to find a plane projective curve as CF over K, percent field K, as the homogeneous F and K join X, Y, Z. So the reason that we require homogeneity is because we have this equivalence relation, and if you take two points that are equivalent, we want this homogeneous polynomial to give you, you know, equivalent outputs. Now the K rational points, so for some field extension, for all field extensions L over K, we can talk about the L rational points. And these are simply the roots of homogeneous polynomial in your field extension. More specifically, we write it as CF of L projected curve in SMU basically means what you think it means. It's categorically equivalent to a 1D connected compact manifold. In more layman's terms, every one of these plane projected curves is either equivalent to a sphere, a torus, a two torus, and so on. And each of these, you can give what's known as a genus. So the genus is essentially the number of poles it has. It says genus 0, it says genus 1, it says genus 2. And that allows us to define an elliptic curve. So an elliptic curve, which we notate as E over K, percentage over K, is simply a smooth projective curve of genus 1 with at least one point. It turns out you can find smooth projective curves of genus 1 that over your field K has no points within your field. So it turns out that these form abelian groups where the point of infinity, find right here, is your identity element. I'm not going to talk about the group relation in general, but at least on fields of characteristic 0, they look something like this. If you graph them out, and you can take two points, take the line secant through them, it can intersect the curve at another point, and then you split that, and that's your addition of points. If you're adding a point to itself, you simply take a tangent line of that point, and if you have two points that form a vertical slope, then your sum is the identity. This characterization of addition completely breaks down when you talk about finite fields. So there's an actual algebraic way to add points. So that equation I wrote down earlier, y squared equals x cubed plus ax plus b, it's called the Riesz-Strauss equation. It does work for fields characteristic not 2 or 3. If you want something of characteristic 2 or 3, you have to use a called generalized Riesz-Strauss equation, and that's just a longer form of this. At least now this gives you an intuition of what an elliptic curve is. So in mathematics, when you have some objects, and we'll talk about mappings between those objects, you want those mappings to preserve the structure that you have. So for groups, you want group homomorphisms, those preserve the structure of your operation. Well, elliptic curves are both geometric and algebraic structures. So you want mappings that preserve both of those properties. Preserving algebraic structures is pretty easy, it's just group homomorphism. But defining how to preserve the geometric structure is a bit more difficult. And that's what I'm going to talk about right now. So, for any curve, all curves, C over K, and everything I'm going to be talking about is specific to smooth projective curves, because that simplifies a lot of the definitions and terms. Each one is defined with some homogeneous polynomial F. We can talk about essentially a field of rational functions. So the function field K of C is just the rational functions such that you require three properties. First of all, G and H are homogeneous of the same degree. And the reason that you require this is basically the same reason that you require homogeneity over there. It's because you want two points that are equivalent to each other to give you the same output with G or H. Second of all, H cannot be in the ideal generated by F, And this is simple because we're setting f to equal 0, right, in the logarithmic curve. So you can't have the denominator to equal 0. And second of all, let's kind of move along with this. G1 over H1 is equivalent to G2 over H2, depending on if G1 times H2 minus G2 H1 Y is in the ideal gender by F, and it's exactly the same thing that I said with point number 2, is because we're taking F to essentially be 0 in our function field. So, as the name implies, this is a field. This is a field under point noise addition, and composition is multiplication. So, your additive identity is just the 0 function, and your multiplicative identity is identity mapping. So, this lets us define at least geometric maps on elliptic curves. So as we saw that before, elliptic curves are essentially defined by 3 points, the projective triple, and we can define a morphism between 2 smooth projective curves. I'm kind of switching between elliptic curves and smooth projective curves. Smooth projective curves, as we saw, is just like a generalization. Is a projective triple in P2 of your function field. So this is defined up in a Coulomb's relationship with two morphisms being equivalent if and only if there exists a element in the unit group of the function field, such that multiplying by x, y, 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 z, by that element gives you the other element. So a theorem that sounds pretty trivial to prove, but is incredibly complicated, is that every morphism of smooth projective curves is either surjective or constant. You'd be surprised how difficult that is to prove, even though it's such a simple statement. But that allows us to define isogenies. And isogenies are essentially taking morphisms and group homomorphisms and combining them to talk about mappings between smooth projective curves in both a geometric and algebraic sense. So an isogeny apply from an elliptic curve to another elliptic curve, which are both over the same field K, is simply surjective. And group homomorphism. So group homomorphisms, as we know, preserve the identity element. And thus, if you take all group homomorphisms that are morphisms, then you have two types, surjective morphisms and the zero morphism, right? Because, as I said, morphisms are either surjective or constant. The only constant morphism is zero morphism, taking everything to zero. So in this definition, we're just specifically excluding the zero morphism. Some authors do include zero morphism when they're talking about isogenies, but a lot of them don't. Silverman, who's like the thorny elliptic curves, doesn't. And that's what I'm doing here. So obviously, two elliptic curves are considered isomorphic. There exists an isogeny with an inverse. So it turns out that there's a categorical equivalence between elliptic curves and their function fields, K of C. So if alpha is an isogeny from E1 to E2, then you can define a alpha star from let's see here, KE2 to KE1 by taking F in function field of E2 and F goes to alpha. So alpha goes from E1 to E2, and then you can apply F in A2 to are inseparable. So that essentially defines isogeny, mappings between elliptic curves, and stuff like the degrees of isogenies and separabilities of isogenies. I'm not sure how much time I have left. Okay, about 10 minutes. So I don't think we're going to get to counting points too much, but let's go over some interesting stuff before I run out of time. So whenever you have a elliptic curve, it's always interesting to know, you know, how many points are in it. That's counting points. And so suppose you have, let's go over Mordell's theorem. Suppose K is a Hilbert field, which is just a finite field extension of the rationals. Then E of K, which is the K rational points, the points in K that satisfy the homogeneous polynomial that defines the elliptic curve, is a finitely generated Abelian group. More importantly, U of Q is isomorphic to a torsion subgroup, which is simply the subgroup of elements of finite order, plus Z of R, where R is the rank. Now, there is a lot of research that goes on into finding the average R over all elliptic curves defined over Q. It was first thought that the average rank lies somewhere between 0 and 1. It was then proven that it lies between 0.2 and 0.9, right? So, this is the average taken over all elliptic curves defined over Q. Now, we believe, but it has not been proven, that this average rank is exactly 0.5, with half of elliptic curves over Q having rank 1, the other half having rank 0, and all the other ranks taking up measure 0. So then you have Mazur, who came along and was able to show that, was able to essentially classify this torsion subgroup. And, well, he said it's essentially one of 15 separate groups. It's either going to be of the form, so T is isomorphic to Z mod NZ, or written down, but essentially there's 15 different ways that T can be formed. So that's over Q, or number fields in general, you can do a similar thing. So for C, which obviously is on number field, we find that E of C is isomorphic both topologically and group theoretically as C modulo lattice. And this becomes incredibly important when analyzing elliptic curves or the complex plane. You get modular forms, which I heard people talking about beforehand, that's incredibly related to this fact. But this shows that both these, this one at least shows that there's infinite points for elliptic curves over C. That one shows, depending on the rank, and the, depending on the rank, whether or not it's infinite. If you have rank 0, then the torsion subgroup, as we can see, is finitely generated, or is finite, and thus the elliptic curve over Q is finite. On the other hand, if you have rank greater than 0, then it's an infinite group. So finally, what about fields of characteristic P, or P greater than 0? Well, then you have Hasse's theorem, which essentially says, let's see, if E over FQ, this because it's actually really interesting, but that'll take maybe at least 10, 15 more minutes, and I definitely don't have time for that. So, yeah, I think we're going to end with that. So, any questions or?
So, whenever you get the UMD sponsor into the category of fields, is that a state co-sponsor?
I think it should be. I'm not sure. I actually haven't studied that in like specific parts, and like the definition and the fact that it's a contravariant filter.
Yeah.
At least that aspect is not really. I mean, it's understood. It's not that useful, at least in the stuff that I've seen.
What book did you use to study algebra geometry?
I haven't taken like an actual full course in algebra. Geometry. I just learned it through elliptic curves. Silverman's book is good. He has like three books, but the basic one, I think, if you just look up Silverman's book, you can basically figure out which one is the easiest one and just go through that. Also, elliptic curves in modular forms by, I forgot who, that goes over basic algebraic geometry too. That's where I learned about modular forms and elliptic curves.
What do you mean by modal planar lattice?
Sorry, I should explain that. So, a lattice in C is simply just the integer linear combinations of two basis vectors, right? So, let's take the simplest lattice, which looks something like this. And essentially, if you have a point here and you translate it up to the next, right, you're essentially dividing up C into this grid. And if you have a point here, the point is equivalent. You're doing an equivalence relation with this point here, and this point here, and this point here. And because of that, what this implies is that this and this are glued together topologically, and then this and this. And what does that give you? A torus, which is the genus one thing coming back to you.
How do you measure this genus thing?
Do you mean like what's the exact definition of a genus? Or what do you mean by
it? Well, how do you calculate it, I guess?
It's just essentially like the simplified version is just the number of holes. So if you take a sphere, right, it has like no holes in it,
yeah.
One torus in this single hole going through it, two torus in these two holes. That's like the over simplified version of it, but that is essentially what's happening because these 1D compact connected manifolds are just simply like sphere, genus 1, genus 2, et cetera. Right? And so it's just, you can just count the number of holes.
Okay.
There's a more complex definition of genus, but I don't remember what it is.
Okay.
There are like 20 of them.
Yeah. But like the rank of the homology here.
Okay, yeah.
Is that a standard one? That's not either.
I mean, homology makes sense because it's like you're talking about the number of holes in here, so like might as well use homology. But to be fair, I study elliptic curves, which is just all over genus one. So once you know that it's genus one, you don't really care about genus anymore. If you study stuff like hyperelliptic curves, which are smooth projective curves, not necessarily over genus one, well, there's a more complex definition of hyperelliptic curves, but then you have to start worrying about what genus actually is.
Yeah. What about genus zero?
It's like the reason that we like elliptic curves, the genus one, is because one, they're not non-trivial, and two, they're not too non-trivial. So if you did this, it's this all smooth projective curves of genus zero are isomorphic, so kind of boring, right? If they're all isomorphic, then it takes like 10 minutes to study them. There'd be no theory of them. After this, I believe that either some of them have form groups, some of them don't. Those that do form groups are super difficult to study, but people do study them. But like elliptic curves are this like kind of nice in between area where they're still highly non-trivial, but at least humans get to study them. So,
Well, let's thank the speaker.